Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Youngstown proper.
Hey, Booba.
Go ahead. Get a mic.
Booba, what's up? What is your primary healthcare provider?
My primary healthcare provider?
Yeah. What's the name of him?
Dr. Rabang.
Mine is the Lord Jesus Christ.
Hey, man.
Poor answer, Booba.
I feel like I walked right into that one, and I feel like I might not be trusting the Lord correctly, because I keep going to a small Hispanic man, and you go to a large eternal being.
So I was talking to a guy at work today, and he said his dad got a phone call from a telemarketer, and they asked him who was his primary health care provider, and he goes, the Lord Jesus Christ. And they said, how about the second one?
Hey, man,
is it to say he's the Alpha and Omega? Is that the right answer right there?
I have been here the entire time that the both of you have been here together, and that was not stated. Was that planned out before tonight?
No, I just thought of it right now.
I could feel when some harassment of you was coming on.
I was going to say, it looked like Ben gave the cue for it, though.
No, yeah. I have an innate sense of when someone's going to give you the whiz bang, and then I agree to it and encourage such a thing.
Hey, man, I have just dealt with that for about 6 years now, so I think I can keep handling that.
I'm here to encourage people.
I like it.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path, broadcasting at livefromthepath.org here every Monday night, and we thank you for joining us tonight. We're largely doing some advice. Here's the thing, is there's rough times out in the world, and we're here to help. And maybe you're snowed in on the East Coast. Maybe it's actually been snowing pretty well here, and maybe you're snowed in. Anyway, we're here to help. So before you get yourself dug out and make a buffoon out of yourself back into the world, we're here to straighten out your problems.
Yeah, no doubt. I guess it's time to kick it off.
Go ahead, Mike.
Here we go. It's the once a year Live from the Path advice extravaganza. So here we go. Dear Live from the Path, my husband and I have been married 7 years, and I have two beautiful children.
Thank you.
Overall, the time we've been together has been wonderful, although we do sometimes argue. On more than one occasion, my husband has shared his concern that I am cheating on him. I've never been unfaithful, nor have I ever given him any reason to think I would be. He's worried because he knows my father was unfaithful to my mother many years ago. We both learned about it because my mother shared it while discussing my brother and his wife. Having had no prior knowledge of this period in my parents' lives, I was shocked. I didn't grow up around it, and I was never taught that cheating is okay. How can I get my husband to stop putting me in the same category as my father? He says he read that cheating is hereditary, so I'm bound to do it. He throws the same accusation at me anytime he gets upset with me. It's starting to affect my hope for our future because I don't think he will ever trust that I love him and don't plan to commit adultery. Signed, not like dear old dad. Yeah, okay. Cheating is not hereditary. You
what?
Dumb fool.
You read somewhere that cheating was hereditary?
I'd be surprised if you can read, if that's what you found.
Hereditary.
Yeah, and A, check his magazine subscriptions.
He's probably subscribed to Cheating is Hereditary Weekly.
Adulterers Monthly.
Boy, I mean, that's really a crappy situation. Obviously there's something else going on with this dude, right? Like why he's using this, either because of, well, there's insecurity somewhere. The question is whether is he doesn't know how to deal with insecurities in his life, so he casts them onto his wife, or he's trying to defer some sort of thought that maybe he's up to. I mean, I don't want to imply he's up to something. I'm just saying
You think he's projecting?
I think he's projecting.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal: is like how. Regardless of whether you're the perpetrator, to have it in your family certainly has some sort of like, oh man, I can't believe this has happened in my family. And then to have someone accuse that of you with no ground or anything, like, that's a real jerk thing to do.
Yeah, my dad was a cheater. I mean, he multiple times, over and over.
I hear that's hereditary.
At least it has not happened to me. I mean, I've not. Okay. It's probably made me stronger. Freaky stronger against any sexual sin than anything because of what I saw in my dad.
Yeah.
You know, so I tend to go, like, I've reacted strongly the other direction. Well, that's just me, but...
I mean, there is something... It's not completely out of balance to say if it's happened in your family. Because, I mean, some of your upbringing, the person that you turn out to be, some of that is environment.
Right. It's not physical heredity. It's not heredity. Yeah,
it's not like passed in your DNA genes, but like in an environment where it's where, you know, sex and marriage is treated.
It's modeled in family values.
Yes. I mean, yeah, when it doesn't have much value, then, yeah, I mean, maybe you could do some inferring there. But, I mean, seriously, like that's not even a logical thought process. And obviously, I think you're right. I think smokers can find other smokers, and cheaters like to, you know, they like to look at behavior and go, that's what I would do, or that's what I would be thinking of doing. And so I feel like he's just belaying his own guilt.
I think the first sentence in the thing is actually pretty telling. I mean, they've been married for 7 years, and that's a pretty typical time in a marriage for the couple to start getting a kind of itch that's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's just, the marriage is kind of weird at that point. So it might be a good time just for the two of them to even just check in with a marriage counselor and just say, hey, here's what's been going on. We want to just, it's like taking your car in for a tune-up. It's just something that's useful for regular maintenance. And if they're at the seven-year mark, then... You know, it's a useful thing to do.
Yeah. Well, so if you had to give advice to, let's say, a party in this situation, like, is there anything you could, let's say the guy is a little bit nutty. You know what I'm saying? He's a little bit, let's say he's not cheating on his wife, but he is very suspicious that she might be cheating on him. What can she do to help ease that?
She, probably one of your best defenses is just a very simple, very, very true statement, like, I am not my father. And just keep repeating it over and over again until he finally gets the message. Anytime he brings it up, just the exact same words, the exact same phrase, I am not my father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually he'll catch on. He'll let the matter drop. It's not going to go any further than that. And
you know. I found that, like, especially when there's a situation in a relationship where, like, a breach of trust has been broken or has happened, is that you have to be willing to put all your cards on the table. And so whatever amount of privacy you thought you had or whatever amount of personal space you thought you had, I feel like if you want to stay in that relationship or stay in that marriage, you have to be willing to give it up for a little while. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't erase your internet browsing history. You don't erase your text messages. And before you do, because you're running low on space on your phone, you say, look, I need to erase my text messages. I'm running low on space. You want to look them over? I'll go in the other room. You just have a look and see what's going on, right? Like, it's all on the table. You can open my mail. There's nothing private to me right now because I need this trust back from you. I need you to feel this way. And, like, I feel like if you are willing to give that up, you're A, not cheating, obviously. and B, like, it really does show something. You know, that, I mean, now granted, should you have to do that? Probably not. But, like, in a situation where there's a lack, what are you losing, right? A little bit of privacy? You're going to see the, your wife's going to see a bad joke that you sent your buddy or whatever. Like, I don't care. I feel like that's completely all on the table as far as your marriage is concerned. And you got to throw all that to the wind and just say, look, my life is an open book. You do whatever you have to do so you can feel better and more secure in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, as harsh as the accusation itself is, what you do have to come to some realization of is, like, what kind of life does your husband live where you're not doing anything, but he lives under a constant fear that you are? Like, take it off of your own shoulders, because if you're not guilty, you're not guilty. And just think, like, what type of – he's living a bad existence, right, with that type of fear and concern. And so, like, that's a guy to pray for, right? That's a guy to encourage and try to find ways to help, because even if I am the party who is being wronged on his accusation – he's still living a junk existence with a heavy insecurity that someone that's close to him is not being faithful. And so, can I look at him even with sympathetic eyes and pray and work to bring him to a point where he's feeling more confident? Because that has to stink. And for someone I care about, I simply don't want them to feel that way. And so, it's difficult because the accusation is at you, but, like, trying to distance yourself from how he's wrong and just recognize that the impact to him is that his existence stinks, may help reframe how you react to it. So it's no longer becomes a personal thing, because it really isn't a personal thing. It's not a personal issue. You're not doing anything. And so now it's just something that he's struggling with that he needs help.
Yeah. And actually I think some of these, it kind of leads open to some other problems that I tend to hear a lot in people's marriages, is like they haven't agreed on their absolutes. Right, the things that are important in their marriage and personally, like, important to each other, and then they start to argue on things that aren't negotiable. Right, like sometimes I'll talk to fellas, you know, that where their wife is very upset at them because they're not home enough. They're like, I need my husband to be home. I want you to spend more time with me. And the dude's classic defense is always, well, someone has to make money around here. Someone has to be out working and making cash, you know? And, like, I always, when I talk to them about this kind of stuff, I'm like, have you guys agreed on what your absolutes were? Because the truth is, like, someone does have to probably make money at your house, but not the amount of money that you're currently making to support the lifestyle that you've set up, right? Like, is your house on the table to make these things better for your wife? Is your car available to trade in for not a quite a fancy model, right? Are you willing to live in an apartment opposed to a house to make this thing work? You know what I'm saying? And then, like, they're like, well, I guess I wouldn't even have thought about that as negotiable, right? And all these things are absolutely negotiable when it comes to how to make your wife and your family work. And so if you're not willing to put those on the table, you're saying that my definition as, say, a mechanic or a banker or a construction guy is way more important than what my marriage looks like at home, which means that you're not willing to give up as much as you thought you were. Secular's advice here. Secular says, I don't know what your husband read that adultery is hereditary, but it's time you ask to see the source of his misinformation because it's wrong. You are not responsible for your father's behavior. Yeah, I'd like to see exactly where this came from.
What periodical are you frequently? Please cite your sources.
I picked up a pamphlet at the bank.
Ancestry.com.
Says you are not responsible for your father's behavior, and your husband to imply that because your father strayed you will is frankly insulting. If you are accused of infidelity any time there's a disagreement, you two aren't getting to the root of what's really wrong in your marriage, and it's time to get professional marriage counseling. Yeah, I agree. I agree. Man, more family stuff. Ready?
Yeah.
Dear Life from the Path, we just hosted the family for our annual post-Christmas get-together. My brother-in-law's girlfriend of many years was on her cell phone during the cocktail hour. Oh, no. The entire dessert course, ooh, and the gift exchange. When I mentioned to my husband how rude she was, he told me she had been checking football scores and cheering, commenting while my daughter was playing the violin song her ensemble had played for the holiday concert.
What?
I never answer my phone when I'm entertaining guests because they are where my attention should be. My daughters have been taught that it's rude to be on the phone during dinner and when guests are over. How can I nip this in the bud without causing a rift with my brother-in-law, whom I love dearly? If pseudo-auntie doesn't want to socialize with people she has been invited to be with, she should stay home. Offended in New Jersey.
Stop being offended.
Yeah, like is this one of the things where, like, you're right, but you're wrong?
Yeah.
He's right. Right. Yeah. That's rude. Yes. The energy you've put into being wronged in the matter seems to be a little excessive.
She is hyper-correct on this and has to have everyone else be absolutely correct on this, or she is offended. She needs to understand that this person is a person. They've been invited to her get-together. And as long as she's being, you know, courteous and a good hostess, that's good. She doesn't need to just stop inviting this gal or even bring it up.
Wait, it's not a dude?
No, it's a lady. She said my brother-in-law's girlfriend.
No, I thought the offendee was a lady, but I thought the offended was a dude. No?
No.
No, the offended is a gal. She talked about her husband, didn't she?
It's a pair of gals. Lady,
I don't pay attention. Okay, continue on.
Yeah, so she's doing a great job being a great hostess, and she needs to leave it at that.
Yeah, she needs to focus on the people who are paying attention and engaged. Yeah. And
yeah, great job. Great job.
Can't micromanage everybody, you know.
Yeah, offended in New Jersey. You're probably just going to have to stay offended or just move past it.
Yeah. Would you bring it up to the brother-in-law?
No.
Here's the thing. Some people are just waiting for poor behavior out of other people so they can shine and be better. You know what I'm saying? Well, I don't ever do that.
Did you notice how great my behavior was?
Oh, wait. Actually, she had to have already brought it up to the brother-in-law because he said she was checking football scores.
She brought it up to her husband.
Oh.
And her husband was the one who said she was checking football scores and was on her phone during her daughter's violin.
Well, okay. Well, someone's already brought it up then.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the deal. It's like sometimes I do rude things and I don't recognize that I'm rude. And, like, sometimes someone needs to say, hey, man, we're chatting. You want to put your phone down? I'm like, oh, yeah, shoot. Yeah, you're right. And, like, I'm not offended by it because sometimes I do get engaged in things that I shouldn't be engaged in. I don't know that I'd be as invested as she is, but, you know, I don't know that it's not worth saying, hey, man, use phone during the violin. Dig on the violin.
But that's not what this is, right? Like, it's not to make that person better or invest in them. It's to basically say, I do great things, this other person does crappy stuff.
No, that's true. She made sure to point out, I never use my... Okay, yeah.
It's really self-righteous. It
would have been better if she hadn't added that. I mean, because at the same point, if your concern is, boy, why don't you engage in the family? You're not in the family yet. Are you, you know, it's a girlfriend, so it's like they're not married. This is the time you're supposed to kind of be feeling people out and kind of, you know, do you even want to be a part of this family? You know, so it's her loss, really, the gal who's on the phone.
Yeah, but who says that this is the time to do it? What if they just don't do that with anybody? That's just kind of their personality. I mean, granted, yeah, they're missing out on life, and they're also missing on relationships that they could have, but, like, I mean, they just walked in the door here, man. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Is it time to start throwing the slaps at them and say, listen, you do terrible things?
Well, I mean, like, when you're going for hours on your phone, ignoring everything, it's like, okay, a conversation, it doesn't be judgmental even, just say, hey, we sure would like to get to know you, but you're in the phone all the time. I've had that conversation before with boyfriends.
I definitely wouldn't want to get to know that person after they called me out on that, though.
That's okay.
Like, it might... I'm trying to think of this. So this is my...
We've established that.
Nice. So I'm trying to think of this. So this would be, in my situation, would be my brother-in-law's girlfriend. I can't imagine having any actual investment in that relationship. Like, I don't find myself...
That's true. She's a little more removed from life. It's not like your future...
Yeah, it's not her...
Daughter-in-law.
Right, it won't be her future daughter-in-law. It's not going to be her sister-in-law. It's actually her brother-in-law, by marriage, his girlfriend. So
whether like, I just married don't, or not, whether they like you or not, really doesn't matter.
Yeah, like, I just don't see myself getting Christmas invested or... enough to even make the comments. Like, I can understand, you're right, it is socially rude. Like, you've been on your phone for hours. I don't think anyone's disagreeing with that. I just think it's from the perspective of, are you really that invested in that relationship to bring it up?
I would just call it. I would just call her phone. I would keep calling it. Hey, I wanted to talk to you.
Hey, I'm in the kitchen.
Just keep calling the phone?
Yeah, like if she's on it, I would just dial it up.
She's on Facebook. She gets a text from you. Hey, did you notice my daughter's violin there? It was great. Didn't you?
Were you recording that?
Were you hearing that?
So if you wanted to do this right, and you knew that that's what she was doing, right? I would just walk by her and say, "Hey, tell me the scores every 5 minutes, will you? Tell me if you're going to keep it on, and will you let me know the deal is?" You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, now gauge her in that way.
Now you have made a friend with them. They still get to check the scores, but now they get to talk to you and act like you're in cahoots or something.
And maybe they're more comfortable now, where they don't need to be on their phone.
I'm just saying, give them some stairs to get out. You don't just grab them with the rope and start yanking. Secular says, I agree with you that pseudo auntie's behavior was rude, and I don't blame you for feeling upset about it. I do not think that it should cause a rift if you were to tell your brother-in-law and his girlfriend that using her cell phone during the dinner you worked so hard to prepare and during your daughter's violin recital caused hurt feelings. I tell them that in the future.
I do not think it will cause a rift if you're a martyr.
Yeah. I hate to break this to you, but you decimated my daughter's heart. Yeah.
And I worked so hard on this turducken.
You did that during cocktail hour.
And I birthed this kid 9 years ago, and we paid for a violin. Yeah, that's self-righteous.
Tell them that in the future you would like her to leave her phone elsewhere during family gatherings in your home. Yeah, boy, that was probably the worst
way
possible.
That is awful advice.
Here's the thing, because you're not putting the... you're not keeping your love on. You know what I'm saying? You're not working at a connection with somebody. You're looking to tell them where you were right and they were wrong.
Right. It's important that I'm understood here.
That's right.
That's quite the relationship you're building.
These are my conditions for you to enter my household.
Exactly.
Also, you have by the way, let me exemplify how great I am.
You have the freedom to be exactly who you are in my home, except for all these things. You're going to be exactly like me when you come in
here. Hey, you know, I run into that quite a bit, actually. I remember I go in a house one time, and they were like, don't smoke. There's an oxygen tank in here. I'm like, keep your love on.
I feel like that might not be apples to apples.
I stormed out.
Those are two very different things.
I dumped my pipe on the ground and I left.
Here we go.
Keep your love on.
This one appears to have to do with what's the etiquette on changing stylists, hairdressers? That'll be very interesting. Huh.
I will speak to this.
Dear Life from the Path, how does one break up with a hairdresser? I'm not unhappy with, parentheses, Flossie, my current one, but I'd like to try someone else for a change of pace. I know people of both sexes who have stayed with hairstylists they are unhappy with because they can't break themselves to break up. So I know I'm not alone in this dilemma. I'd love to hear from hairdressers how they would prefer this to be handled. Do they take it personally? Well, heck yeah, they do.
Well, yeah. I no longer want your specific services.
Yeah, I don't trust you with this part of my life. it's going to shine a little bit.
It's personal. I don't know that it's a deep wound, but it's certainly personal.
Yeah.
I think it depends on like, is it in a shop that the person owns, or are they just one on staff of a large
consortium of stylists?
You're not
place?
Worried about leaving Jenny at the Great Clips. Like, that's not a big deal.
I would, because in that case, you just, don't go back. don't make the next appointment?
How scared of life do you have to be? Like, if you, let's say you don't go back to this person, like, there's 300 million plus people in the United States, and your concern is that you run into her. She recognizes that your hair is done up, and that she didn't do it, and is aghast.
Gentlemen, I've run into this. I'm not proud of saying this, by the way, I've run into this specific situation.
Like, did you flee?
I had to break up with a hairstylist.
How did it go?
And I go to church with said hairstylist. And I kind of just stopped showing up. And I showed up one day with my hair done up in a certain way, and she was not the one who did it.
Right. Uh-huh.
And she kind of looked at me, and I looked back at her thinking, well, here it is, boys. Here's the situation.
And how did it go?
And we kind of just went, eh. And we walked past each other, and that was exactly what had happened.
Have you spoken with her since?
Yeah, all the time.
Okay.
No problems. However, the fact that she's part of my church family might have been a little different because I've known her for like 10 years.
You did kind of handle it like a pansy, though.
Yeah, but I didn't think about it at the time. Like, I just thought to myself, hey, I got a guy who recommended another person, and like, he really, really recommends this dude that, like, he knows what he's doing. And so I'm going to go to them.
Maybe she just assumed getting hair done by another person is hereditary.
Maybe. Was I well, a hairstylist adulterer? Yeah, so I kind of just... I stopped making appointments, and then I started in another website. That's the whole thing that happened for me.
Actually, I tell you what, it feels worse on the other end. Like, I've had my hairstylist stop cutting hair, and I was devastated. I mean, like, I had no idea what to do when I went to another hairstylist. They would say, hey, what, you know, how would you like your haircut? I'm like, I don't know.
Regular.
I don't know.
Call Rachel. She knows me.
It is like trying to date another woman after your wife, right? You spend so much time, you know the people's quirks. They know how to deal with you. You don't have to put on airs, and then you show up. It's like you're dating somebody new.
It is. Yeah. They're like asking about how many kids you have. I'm like, I don't have to discuss this stuff with Jen. She just cuts my hair.
What social weirdos are you guys that turns into a weird situation? Oh,
I can't take it.
Building a relationship.
I tried to get my hairstylist to write down what needs to happen so I can just hand a card over and be like,
awesome.
Do these things.
like the meat slicer thickness at the Walmart.
Like, I could just order the standard mic, you know, whatever. But then every time I go to the new hairstylist and they're like, you have two weird bumps on your head. I'm like, yeah, no, they're fatty deposits. I'm supposed to get them removed. The other lady doesn't bring it up anymore. So, will you just cut my hair? She's like, do you want to taper or this and that? I'm like, I don't know your hairstyling lingo. Just make me look better than I did when I came in.
Did you say you have two fatty deposits? Whatever. All right, never mind.
Yeah, I used to go, when I was a kid, I went to different ones every time, and, you know, whatever. I don't know. We had no standard. And I'd go through the whole story every time. They're like, do you know your hair grows forward? I'm like, yeah, they tell me that every time. And, like, that gives them challenges. Instead of growing backwards, it grows forward or something. And anyway, that's
Have you ever
story.
Let it grow really long so it goes way forward? And
it used
covers
to
your
have, like, a unicorn horn in front of you.
I used to, sweet deal. Yeah, yeah. I used to have it pretty long in the back, too. And
are you admitting a mullet?
Hey, man.
It was mullet-ish.
We've been doing this show for almost 6 years, and I've never heard that your hair grows forward.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to admit all of a sudden.
Well, I don't talk about it a lot. It's kind of personal.
You can look at it. It
just goes forward.
Yeah.
That's why I put gel on it, and I just go backwards.
It's
and
not
I
that you kinda... have a... Maybe your forehead is just at an incline, at a decline, like a Neanderthal.
It used to be, like, super thick, like carpet, and they used to love, like, oh, it's like carpet. I'm like, I hear that every time. Thank you.
What was that voice, Dan?
I was a creepy, like, creepy hairstylist.
Like Gargamel.
It was sometime in the 90s I started cutting it short because I used to keep it pretty long all the time. And then it was so easy, I was like, yeah, I'm going to keep doing the short thing. And so it's been short for a long time now.
Boy, okay, so anyway.
Ben, what's your hairstylist like?
Excuse me, I buzz my hair in the bathroom on my loathsome.
I did the Baptist part on the side for a while, too. That was pretty sexy.
The only thing I don't do is I have my wife clean up the back of my neck because I can't get it quite right, and it curls. So, like, I would have dog shaved every other part of my head, and then I just have these curls in the back. So my wife kind of straightens that out. But
that's unsightly.
Yeah.
Hey, man. When I used to shave my head, I ran into so many situations where I was awful at doing it. Like, I had there's a trial and error period of when you start shaving your head for the first time. Like, I had it looked like someone, like, hacksawed the back of my head, and I had all kinds of, like, hair patches and stuff like that, but no one would break the social contract that they felt they had and would tell me, and I'd get home and I'd look at it after a whole day, and I'd just be like, people were probably staring at me thinking I'm some mental patient that tried to just take a razor to the back of my head and just figure things out in life, right? It was awful.
I've always told everybody that I think you should shave yourself bald at least once, so that way if you go blind, you know the deal. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can just get shaved bald once you're blind and be like, at least you know what you look like. Otherwise, you're at the mercy of other people styling your hair, and they could make you look like a buffoon.
Hey, man,
every time
I
let my wife
comb
my hair, she tries to make me look like Andre Agassi from the 80s. I mean, it's a disaster. I try to put product in it and stuff. I'm like, who is this guy in the mirror? I don't even know this man. So the best move is to just shave yourself bald, and that way, if you were to, unfortunately, go blind in the future, you'd be like, just shave me bald. At least I know what I look like.
Yeah.
That's good enough for me.
I look like Uncle Fester.
Yeah, maybe not you, Bubba. You should go with a wig. Let's see. Secular says, really any good advice on breaking up with a hairstylist?
Go somewhere else.
Yeah, just do it. It's a business relationship. Don't be socially awkward and feel like you have to go and date your new hairstylist. Walk into the new establishment, go, hey, this is my first time here. Let me talk to you.
Do you feel like you have to, like if you've been going for X number of years, that you have to say something like, I'm going somewhere else, or you just stop showing up?
I feel like it might be nice to do.
If it's been years, right? Like, wouldn't they start to think about you?
I would do that for a butcher. Like, and that's not just because it's me and food, but
I think it is.
Yeah, I would do that for a butcher. Like, if I went to one butcher and he knew how to make my ham sandwiches, you know? Like, the best way.
The only butcher I'm aware of is on the Brady Bunch.
You know that's an actual profession and they exist, right?
I know.
Okay, cool beans.
Styrofoam and a Hy-Vee.
Go
to Fairway.
Yeah, there's plenty of places that they're actual butchers and they'll talk to you about all kinds of stuff. Wow. I would do that for a butcher. If I went to the same butcher for years, I would switch it up and say, hey, man, Sammy, I'm going to the new place.
I'm taking, me and my loins are going to another man.
Hey, man, you've done my brisket well for years.
Have
and
you guys
I greatly
ever,
appreciate you.
Ever heard of a cut of meat called a joint of meat?
Yes.
A joint of meat?
Have you really?
No.
Is that illegal
in Utah?
Eastern thing?
Legal in most.
No, it's I don't know exactly what part
only cows in the Middle East have a joint.
Well, here's the thing, is I was reading up on how a microwave actually cooks food, and they said like you can cook a joint of meat like five times as fast in a microwave opposed to an oven.
And it called it like, is it a unit of measurement or is it a cut?
I'm not sure about that. That's why I was asking.
I'm looking up.
Give me two joints. You know what I'm saying?
That just sounds
like... Depends on what part of town you're in. That could go well or not well.
Pass the joint, yeah. Hey, even at the Walmart meat counter, that's 50-50.
Maybe Spike, might be like a leg or something.
Maybe Spike Lee's joint is like a meat market.
The knee.
Anyway, here we go. Secular says, this is Secular's advice here. Some do take it personally, I'm sure. If you have a personal as well as business relationship with Flossie, she may feel hurt that you're leaving. However, it is not a sin to want to try someone else. It depends on what context of relationship you're talking about. It happens all the time in that business. My advice is to call Flossie in advance and let her know you won't be coming so she can schedule someone else in that time slot. Then try the other stylist. That way, if you don't like that stylist's work, you can return to Flossie with no hard feelings. Yeah, right.
She's going to know you went somewhere else.
Yeah. She's going to see your hair.
Yeah.
Ooh.
My barber has accused me of going to other barbers before. Maybe he thinks that adultery is hereditary.
But it wasn't true?
No, it wasn't true. He was like, hey, man, did someone mess up my hard part? I'm like, no, dude. He goes, did you have someone else touch your hair? I'm like, nice guy. I didn't do it. I promise. I call him nice guy. That's his name. I said, I promise I didn't do that. He goes, good. Because I would have been upset.
Hey.
So maybe I have that vindictive barber right now that like if he ever finds out if I go to a different place, he'll find me.
Oh, you don't want to make the barber mad.
He's the size of my left leg. I'm not super worried about it.
A hairdresser, okay. They have razors.
Hey, and they're also mobile. Yeah, they're the wrong. They're like nomads.
Holy cats.
You're going to find a rabbit cooking on your
right?
stove. I mean, seriously.
Like, what's this horse's head doing in my...
They're gypsy folk, but you must be careful.
They're gypsy folk? Oh, man, I'm going to call them out.
They travel around making money?
Hey, man, here's the deal. I will have a conversation with my barber. The next time I go in, which should be a few weeks from now, I'm going to ask him how he feels about someone no longer coming to him and going to somebody else. We're going to get an answer from an actual barber.
Okay, check it out. I'll talk to myself
on the
about
streets.
In the bathroom with the dog hair clippers. Go ahead, Mike.
All right. This one might be up our alley, boys. Dear Life from the Path, I was raised in the Christian faith by my pastor parents. Mm-hmm. As I reached my early teens, I realized that those beliefs didn't really fit, and I gradually stopped attending church. I stayed away all through college. My time away only solidified that, in terms of belief, Christianity wasn't for me. After I graduated this year, I realized I missed the community and the ritual of the faith and the church. There are a number of churches in my area, but I feel guilty attending one when I don't believe in the same thing as the other members. My family always taught me to be considerate of the beliefs of the people around me, and it seems dishonest to go to a service and listen to prayers my heart doesn't embrace. I'd like to attend church. Have you any suggestions for what might be a good course of action? Should I go to church or stay home?
I guess I don't quite get it. You think that the beliefs are something, or you think the beliefs are nothing? Because no, if they're nothing, then why regard it?
I think she just likes having friends.
How are you really going to...
I mean, isn't this the truth of most folks who end up outside of the church, is they want the benefits of a relationship and a kingdom lifestyle without actually being in the kingdom and following the king?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like this guy wants to take advantage... Oh, guy or gal, I can't remember, but they want to take advantage of like being around people, because it's, you know, it's a positive feeling in their life and they enjoy that, but they don't want any of the strings that come with that, of actually having a real relationship with those people and a relationship with the God that they're representing.
Hey man,
I get that. It sounds like he wants the relationship with the people, yeah, just not with God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
He wants the community. He wants Cheers.
Found a coffee shop.
Because he likes the people, he likes the interaction.
Here's this cannot be a surprise to us. God creates good community. How can we be surprised that somebody wants it?
I'm not surprised by it. It's just
Kiwanis Club down the road. Although they pray,
it's not. Here's the deal: it's not as good as God's community. People are drawn to.
I say all four come to the church.
So what I'm saying is that like people of course are drawn to things that God's people produce or involved in, because God's things are good. That's why people want to be married. that's why people engage in God's institutions, if you want to think of them that way. They're positive things that people want to be part of. That's why they'll fight for them. The truth is they're missing the undergirding from them, but those institutions ultimately do point to God, and so I'd say go.
Yeah, okay. I'd say I wouldn't disagree with that. I think just the surprising thing is the honesty behind the statement of, I have no desire to have the relationship with the God that they're offering. I don't believe in any of the faith, and I'm going to completely go against that, but I'd like to hang out with them and enjoy their company. Most people are willing to play it fake and go, oh yeah, like I want to be in this church, and you know, I believe in your God, blah, 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 and they're willing to play that fake role to be a part of that community.
They'll run into Jesus. Here's the... You
agreed. Yeah, no, go to church.
I would go to a different brand than whatever he was raised in, because it could be, we're assuming, a good, solid, Bible-believing church type of thing. It could be a church that's really no regard for Scripture. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying, maybe I wouldn't believe in the God they preach either.
Hold on. Now, you got to put this in relation to what she's actually asking, because you're coming at it from the, we're in the church, yeah, come on in, no problem, right? Mm-hmm. But like, she's basically saying, I really like the community involved with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not an alcoholic myself, but I just like going to the meetings and hanging out with everybody involved. Yeah. I don't believe in a word they're saying. None of it really applies to me, but I just like to be in the group.
Yes, yeah, she's mistaken. It'll help.
Mm-hmm. You don't go to a church because you got everything all figured out and because you're already clear.
Yeah, but once again, you're looking at it from the church side saying, hey, come on in. Right, we as a community don't have any issue with that. Would the Alcoholics Anonymous guys have a problem with someone who's not an alcoholic just showing up to soak up the community time and not there for the same reason?
Maybe, but that's not what she's asking.
So you're talking about different businesses there.
Yeah, here's the thing.
They're not different to her.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. She wants to come to the church. Great. We want her to come to the church. Great. I don't know what we're arguing about.
Because she's not asking the church. She's asking secular.
And secular says, hey, if the church wants you to be there and you want to be there, sounds like a double win.
Yeah.
Go in. What are you going to accidentally get baptized or something? Like,
I tripped and fell.
It'll shake out.
Look, at some point, your differing objectives might come into some sort of conflict. You can resolve it at that point.
Like maybe you can eventually become an alcoholic, and then you could fit in with the group.
Here's the deal.
I'm having trouble with the metaphor.
Yeah, yeah, I don't understand. Like you, we want people to go out and love people like Christ loved us. Basically, through the community, have people come to know Jesus. Uh-huh. She wants to come in here and be part of that community, not knowing Jesus. But that seems like the thing we go hit the streets to find.
Yeah, but she's not asking if the community will accept her. She already knows the answer to that.
Right, so it's irrelevant. The distinction you're trying to make is completely irrelevant, because it's a question that nobody cares about. She wants to go and enjoy the community. The community wants to go, will welcome her. Done.
The community is common ground. They can build a relationship on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The community is hoping that in her involvement in the community, she'll catch Jesus.
Yeah, because here, because the truth is, the things that she wants about that community, she ultimately finds in Christ. She just doesn't know that. Yeah, this
secular,
is fine.
Secular says, you don't have to stay at home.
Yep.
Instead,
Mike's wrong.
You don't have to stay.
Have you
at
been
home.
Wrong your whole life?
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I can wait. I can wait this out way longer than you can.
This is going to be a great show. It's going to be silence after this.
No, no.
Here's the thing. She's actually not that unique in the church. There are a lot of people who struggle with and against God with their spiritual walk. I mean, there are, you know, here we are, five guys, and half of us are fighting for our kingdoms against God, even though we're actually fighting with God and we want to surrender our kingdoms.
Which half?
It's, you know, God is constantly coming in and saying, oh, you think this is a limit that I can't overcome? Yeah, right. Yeah. Your life is mine. It always has been, and watch how I can redeem it. So, you know, her position's really not all that different from ours. She just thinks it is.
Eric, I felt like you shot me a glance when you said that whole fighting for your own kingdom thing.
I was looking at all of us, actually.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. Just checking. Mike, what's secular say?
You don't have to stay home. Instead, explore a denomination that has no dogma or creed. One in particular, Unitarian Universalism, has been mentioned before in this column. Unitarian Universalists believe in the dignity and worth of every human being and encourage and support others in following their personal spiritual paths. If you'd like to visit, more information, blah, 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 blah.
Did she just give out the website?
I was going to say it didn't.
Yeah. Secular's advice is to go to the Universalist, Unitarian Universalist Church. Hmm. Problem solved.
What, so now here's what's interesting is that her desire to go to a church versus any other social institution, right? To Dan's point, like Kiwanis is down the road, right? So like, what is it about, like, I would know what it is about a church that is appealing. But it is interesting for her to say, like, I like the community aspect. Why don't I join the Lions Club? I have extra pairs of glasses. They have meetings set up. We can come together on this thing. So like, I wonder what it is about church that she seems to want to be a part of when, I mean, there are plenty of other alternative, like, you know, the Unitarian Church, it's just a gathering of people, right, under a common belief or lack of belief or a blanket of beliefs. And so there's a lot of things that could be that thing.
Yeah, but she commented, or she or he, I really don't know at this point in time, commented that she grew up in the church, right? Yeah. So that could be something that she's trying to latch back onto, is that she at one point in time had that community, but through her own admission, she grew up and then grew away from those beliefs and things like that. But she remembers the community that she had with that church. And that could very well be the draw that brings her back.
Just because it's got the fond memory.
Yeah. You know.
But I mean, isn't she trying to hook up with a group of people that share her belief in non-belief? You know what I'm saying? The whole point of asking this question was, I don't really believe in the core values of what's going on here. And Secular has said, well, why don't you get around a bunch of other like-minded folks who don't have a belief in anything either? So it's not really just for the genuine community issue. She's still trying to point her to have something in common with the group that she's attending.
Yeah, I guess all I'm saying is that you can get that anywhere. So, like, it doesn't even have to be the Unitarian Church, right? Like, she's right about that belief structure, but, like, it's just another social group. Go to the bar. There's plenty of places to get community.
All right, dear Life from the Path. Floral delivery fee gives friend a fright. Oh, boy. Dear Life from the Path, the mother of a friend recently passed away. I wanted to send a nice plant to the funeral home and was shocked at how much it cost to have a small plant delivered. Is it a no-no to buy a beautiful plant and deliver it to the funeral home yourself?
No.
No.
What?
Why would that be a problem? Like, hey, is it a problem if you do that more personally?
Well, I mean, they don't even have to know it. You just take it to the funeral home.
I don't want to
say this is for the Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
Funeral.
I don't want to pay the delivery charge. Sorry, it's fine.
I don't like the premise, but yeah, just be more personal. Just show up.
They don't know who brought it. I mean, there's a funeral. Yeah. There's just a bunch of plants and flowers that they don't know who brought them.
Yeah, like you have to put a name card on there. If it's dedicated from like a group of people,
right?
Like,
but I mean, they don't know who delivered it.
Right. Well, yeah, right.
You can still get that card if you bought the.
Yeah,
plant.
That's true.
Yeah. You're gonna shake down the casket and be like, "How many of these were delivered by hand as opposed by a legit delivery
no,
man?"
I'm saying that there's no problem with hand delivering it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I would even notice if there were no plant life whatsoever at a family member's funeral. So, why this is even a consideration.
I don't recall who sent flowers to the funerals that I've been to.
Is that why you haven't sent a thank you card?
Yeah, I never sent those thank you cards.
rough times.
I want my flower back.
Hey, sorry. I was in a bad way, Dan. My bad.
flower. Yeah, this isn't a legit question. Yeah, of course you can deliver it.
Segler says, if it's a no-no, I've never heard about it. If having the plant delivered would stretch your budget, by all means, take it over before the viewing. It's the thought that counts, and your wish to commemorate the death of your friend's mother is thoughtful and beautiful. Yeah, okay. I mean, are they just worried, like, is it like, I mean, are you revealing that you think that, what, you're not willing to spend $85, and so the moment didn't mean anything to you? Like, they're trying to put a price tag on what happened here, like, I'd send flowers, but that's too expensive. And well, you didn't mean enough to me to send flowers for $85.
Let's say you're on a budget, and you say, man, I want a nice little $25 plant. You're thinking, okay, well, that's a $25 delivery fee. All of a sudden, you're like, whoa, I wasn't prepared for that. And that's probably what's going on, that's all. I mean, I've thought that before, but I pay it.
I hand-deliver the flowers.
Yeah. I have thought that before. It's like, I'm going later. I
could just not afraid of the situation.
All right. Well, here we go, dear. Excuse me. Dear Life from the Path. My friend of 25 years, Violet, moved back to town a few months ago after living far away for the last 10 years. Whereas we've always called and confided in each other often, now that she's here, I rarely see her, never talk with her, and receive polite but curt refusals to do anything together. I know the move was stressful for her, and I suspect the problem is about her more than me. But I'm really hurt, and I miss her. My last request to get together and talk was met with, I'm only doing what I feel I can enjoy and manage. It seems like that doesn't include our friendship. Should I simply leave my old friend alone, or is there something you can suggest? I'm only doing what I feel I can enjoy and manage.
So the friend is saying that spending time with this person is not a part of the things that she can enjoy and manage.
Sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't sound like she wants to hang out with you at all.
Yep.
Yeah,
move on.
Like, if I was a friend of 25 years, I feel like I could be honest and say, hey, you know, I'm busy or I'm doing something, and this person sounds like they're just flat out trying to avoid you.
Some people are just better long distance friends.
Yeah.
I mean,
it sounds like whoever it is, they just need space. So, yeah. At the very least, give them space. They might sometime get over this period of their life and realize, hey, I really want to reconnect. You know, you can leave the door open for that. But
right. Love on them where you are, but from a distance and without them knowing about it.
Okay. Well, here's Secular's advice. Write Violet a short, sweet note. Tell her that you care about her, have always treasured her friendship, and hope it will continue. Let her know that when she feels like talking, you will be there for her. It's really all you can do at this point. After all, the ball will be in her court, and you should not sit by the phone waiting for a call. Go on with your life and your other friendships as before. If she responds, terrific. If not, it will be her loss. Do not make it yours.
How does Secular know that it would be her loss?
Yeah, I mean,
I think she's patronizing her.
Kind of funny. All right.
All right, here we go. What was the purpose of King Agrippa's trip to Caesarea? Under categories Kings of the Bible, this is a 12-point quiz on King Agrippa.
This is to listen to Paul. Make a decision on his behalf.
So here's your options. What was the purpose of King Agrippa's trip to Caesarea? 1, to salute Festus. 2, to salute Caesar. 3, to salute Herod. 4, to salute Pilate.
Caesar.
Festus.
Agrippa's trip to Caesarea. Festus, Caesar, Herod, or Pilate? Who's he saluting?
I said Caesar.
I'm going blank.
I'm sticking with Festus.
It is not Caesar.
It's not Caesar. There. And it wouldn't be Pilate.
It wasn't Pilate either.
So it's Festus.
I'm going to go Festus.
Festus sounds a lot like Gunsmoke.
Yeah. He is Herod, so it's Festus.
Yeah.
Process
of elimination. It's
Festus.
Why is it not Caesar?
One of the Herods.
Just from my own knowledge. Why is it not Caesar?
Caesar was in Rome.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul travels to Caesar after dealing with Agrippa and Festus. Right.
Yeah, it's Festus.
Yeah, it's Festus. Okay. Number 2. What did Festus say to Agrippa when Agrippa asked to hear Paul's defense? You can hear him today, you can hear him tomorrow, you can hear him next week, you can hear him next month.
Oh.
Today.
I have no idea.
I don't remember that at all.
Today, tomorrow, next week, or next month. So it's not, it's either today or tomorrow. Because I don't think he stayed there for next week or next month.
Yeah.
Go tomorrow.
I don't think.
Yeah,
I'll say tomorrow.
I'm staying with today.
I think I'm with Mike today.
Switch to today just to Ben, go ahead and bandwagon on that one.
All right, move
no
a bandwagon,
idea.
So we're going
move
today.
Move a bandwagon.
Next
I
month,
no
just
idea.
To cause division.
Okay, who was Agrippa's wife?
Mrs.
Beryl, Barris, Beatrice, Bernice.
Beatrice.
Yeah, Beatrice.
Beatrice.
Okay, I think it's Bernice, but we'll go with Beatrice. Number four, Festus told King Agrippa that many of the Jews had dealt with him concerning Paul, that he ought to be ordained as the first pontiff, ought to be canonized as a saint, ought to not live any longer, ought not to take the livelihood from other tent makers in the city.
I guess live not any live longer. Any longer.
Not live any longer?
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall the word pontiff in the book.
I'm pretty sure pontiff is
not
yeah.
pontiff.
And canonized
is Peter's job. No.
Tent makers, that's not the right place.
Yeah.
Wrong place for tent makers.
So not live any longer seems like our only option.
Yeah.
I guess.
See how it goes. What was Festus hoping to achieve by having Paul appear before Agrippa? A, Festus was hoping that Agrippa would condemn Paul to death. Festus hoped that Agrippa would find Paul innocent and would free him immediately. Festus thought that Paul had done nothing worth of death and wanted something to write to Caesar about him. Festus wanted to see what Agrippa would do with Paul.
Say B.
Hope that he would find him innocent and free him immediately?
Yes.
No, I don't think that was the deal.
Hoped he would condemn him to death, free him immediately, thought that he had done nothing worthy of death and wanted to write to Caesar.
Wait.
And wanted to see what he would do with Paul.
I think it's write to Caesar.
I'm going to go with C.
Write to Caesar?
Yeah, because I think if I recall right, Festus, he knew it was a problem, but he didn't know how he was going to handle it because Paul was Roman. Yeah. And so he wanted someone higher up than him to do the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
King Agrippa. No, King Agrippa's coming to Festus.
Right.
Yeah, Festus wanted Agrippa to do the heavy lifting.
Okay. Six, what special privilege did Paul have granted to him in the hearing? The king's servant took him water. He sat with the king at the table. He was able to have a defense lawyer. He was able to speak for himself. He was able to speak for himself. Yeah, Paul does not farm out the gospel. Number seven, how did Paul feel about talking to King Agrippa? He was ecstatic. He was happy. He was afraid. He was terrified.
Ecstatic.
Happy. I don't think either one of them words were in there.
He was afraid?
Seems like a personal opinion.
I think he said he was happy to speak to him.
Okay, happy.
All right, happy. Number eight, what did Paul tell Agrippa he was on trial for? For the hope of the promise God made to our forefathers? For failure to observe the Sabbath? For punishing the Christians in every synagogue and compelling them to blaspheme? For claiming that Jesus had spoken to him in Hebrew?
A.
Hope of the promise. Okay. Number nine, where did Paul tell Agrippa he went to first after Jesus had spoken to him? Jerusalem, Damascus, coast of Judea, the Gentile nations.
Damascus.
Any, no? Everybody's good there?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. 10, what question did Paul ask King Agrippa? Do you believe what I'm telling you? Do you believe the prophets? Do you believe in the resurrection of the dead? Do you believe that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God?
Wait, read those again?
Do you believe what I'm telling you? Do you believe the prophets? Do you believe in the resurrection of the dead? Do you believe that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God? I think it's the prophets. What do you think it is? Do you believe what I'm telling you?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay, we'll go with A. I think it's do you believe the prophets? Because I think
I actually think Ben's right.
I think it's a Herod who has some claim of King of the Jews, and so like he's making a case with him.
Right.
That's why I think it's do you believe the prophets. But we'll leave it as A. Number 11. What did Agrippa say to Paul to show him that he was impressed with what he heard? Almost thou persuadest me to become a Christian. See, here is water. What doth hinder me to be baptized?
It's A.
Yeah. Okay.
Almost.
Yeah.
Almost persuaded me to become a Christian.
In the good King James.
12. What reason did Agrippa give to Festus for not setting Paul free? Agrippa had taken money from the chief priest to see
he
Paul was convicted.
To Caesar.
Paul had already appealed to Caesar for hearing. That's D.
Yeah, D.
Okay.
Hey, Eric, give the rest of us a shot.
Ready?
Oh, sorry.
Here we go. See what goes on here.
34%.
Okay, here we go. Number one, what was the purpose of King Agrippa's trip to Caesarea? We said to salute Festus. That is correct. What did Festus say to Agrippa when Agrippa asked to hear Paul's defense? We said, you can hear him today. That was incorrect. It's, you can hear him tomorrow.
Yeah.
Number three, who was King Agrippa's wife? We said Beatrice. That is incorrect. It is Bernice.
You were right, Ben.
Number four, Festus told King Agrippa that many of the Jews had dealt with him concerning Paul, that he, we said, ought not to live any longer. That is correct. Number five, what was Festus hoping to achieve by having Paul appear before Agrippa? We said Festus thought that Paul had done nothing worth of death and wanted something to write to Caesar about him, and that is correct. Number six, what special privilege did Paul have granted to him in the hearing? We said he was able to speak for himself. That is correct.
Is that not normal?
If he wasn't a Roman citizen, he wouldn't be allowed. And furthermore, he's speaking before the king. That's something that only the king grants.
Yeah. But he was a Roman citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see. How did Paul feel about talking to King Agrippa? We said he was happy, and that is correct. Question eight. What did Paul tell Agrippa he was on trial for? He said for the hope of the promise God made to our forefathers. That is correct. Number nine. Where did Paul tell? In fact, that will be telling to our incorrect answer in question 10. He's made a case to the forefathers. It's going to be the prophets. Number nine, where did Paul tell Agrippa he went to first after Jesus had spoken to him? We said Damascus. That is correct. Question 10, what question did Paul ask King Agrippa? We said, do you believe what I am telling you? That is incorrect. The correct answer is, do you believe the prophets? Question 11, what did Agrippa say to Paul to show him that he was impressed with what he heard? We said, almost thou persuadest me to become a Christian. And that is correct. And 12, what reason did Agrippa give to Festus for not setting Paul free? We said Paul had already appealed to Caesar for a hearing, and that is also correct. We answered 9 of 12 questions correctly for a score of 75%. Quiz has been taken 5,000 times since March of 2007, and the average score is 66%.
Yeah.
66%.
We beat the average.
Yeah, still feeling great.
We beat the I hate to tell this to you boys, but if we've gone my way on two of those, we'd have been 11-12. Let's see, you want to take another one?
Sure.
Let's do Nebuchadnezzar.
Yes.
We will dominate Nebuchadnezzar.
Oh no. Alright, go ahead.
Only seven questions. Here we go. Nebuchadnezzar was king of what city?
No options.
Okay. King of what city?
Anybody know without the options?
Babylon.
Babylon.
Yeah. Okay.
Babylon. Which king of Judah was taken to Babylon in fetters by Nebuchadnezzar?
Zedekiah, I believe.
That sounds right.
Mike, Bubba?
Zedekiah is indeed an option.
It is an option. Quit peeking back there.
I can barely read.
You're not allowed to do it.
Hey, man, it just gives the choices.
I'm not to the level those gentlemen are. I need options.
Jehoiakim. Jehoiachin, Zedekiah, Jehoahaz.
Does that help, Bubba?
Well, I know that eliminated two of them, and Zedekiah was one of the ones that didn't get eliminated, so I'll go with it.
I think it is Zedekiah. I think Jehoiachin was in place after that. Mm-hmm. I think he was one of them puppet gentlemen. who was the commander Nebuchadnezzar ordered to put his wise men to death?
Aosh, or something like that.
You want the options on this one?
Yeah.
Ashpenaz, Azariah, Mishael, Arioch.
Arioch. That's it.
Anybody else?
No.
What was the first one?
Ashpenaz.
No.
You trying to get me to use a bad language on the radio, Boovan. I don't appreciate it. all right, we're going with Arioch? Okay, number four. In Nebuchadnezzar's dream of a tree, what did the tree represent?
His kingdom.
Him and his kingdom.
Is it him or his kingdom, Bubba? Bubba only.
Well, so it was, I'm trying to think of it. It was reaching towards the sky. Had, you know, great branches that all the animals were able to get shade under and all the good stuff. So it's kingdom. Yeah.
Kingdom?
Yeah.
Any disagreements? Everybody in for kingdom? Do you want the options?
What are the options?
In Nebuchadnezzar's dream of a tree, what did the tree represent? Nebuchadnezzar, a future kingdom, the Jews, the Assyrians.
Because it didn't it's represent him. The future kingdom. Yeah, it's him, because then it talks about like being laid low, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, and then he it talk about but him getting like wet restored. With the dew of the the grass and stuff like that.
The tree ends up having long fingernails and eating stuff off
the ground. Yeah, it's him personally.
The mind of a beast, it's him.
Yeah.
Because the kingdom continued on during that period.
Right. Okay. Number five. What did King Nebuchadnezzar first do when Daniel interpreted his dream? You want the options, or are you going to...
Wait, when Daniel first his first dream, so... he immediately praised God, didn't he? Is that one of the options?
Do you put the options or don't you?
I'm trying to do this at you guys' level, and I'm just thinking, hey, man, whatever. I need options.
Okay. What did King Nebuchadnezzar first do when Daniel interpreted his dream? He had his wise men put to death. He banished Daniel from his presence. He fell on his face and worshipped Daniel. He worshipped the God of Daniel.
I think he worshipped the God of Daniel.
Yeah, the wise men was a threat before Daniel showed up. Six, how tall was the golden idol erected by Nebuchadnezzar?
90 feet.
Can I get that in cubits?
30 cubits.
90 cubits.
9 cubits.
Wait, hang on.
90 cubits. 6 cubits. 60 cubits.
I want to say 9 cubits. That doesn't sound right to me.
No, it was...
Why would you want to say the wrong thing?
Well, because what I'm saying is that's the first thing that popped in my head was 9 cubits.
I just want to do it.
Well, that's the thing.
I really want to say the wrong thing.
Right.
But so it's got to be one of the bigger numbers, right?
Like, 90 cubits.
What's a cubit?
About a foot and a half.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be 90.
90.
Yeah.
It's like up on holy cats, 90. So a foot and a half, that'd be 120 foot tall.
Actually, it might be 60 cubits.
That'd be 90 foot tall.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's about a 9-story building.
Okay, what do we think? 60 cubits?
Yeah, Herrick seems to...
Based off of confidence, I'm going to go for 60 cubits.
Hold on, Boova, what was the wrong answer again?
9 cubits.
Okay. Like a basketball
I'm 100% certain that the answer that came to my head was incorrect.
Number 7, who became king of Babylon after Nebuchadnezzar?
According to what source?
here we go, I'll give you the options. Okay. Daniel... No. Shadrach.
No.
Belshazzar.
Belshazzar.
Or David.
Belshazzar.
And that's he's distinct from Belteshazzar, right?
Yeah, because that was Daniel's Daniel. Babylonian name.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Belshazzar. Here we go. Yeah. Oh, man, I feel like we should have... we may be either overconfident or underconfident on this thing. Oh, my. Number one, Nebuchadnezzar was king of what city? We said Babylon. That is correct. Which king of Judah was taken to Babylon in fetters by Nebuchadnezzar? My confidence was misplaced in Zedekiah. The answer is Jehoiakim.
Yeah.
What? Yep. Question 3.
I almost fought that.
Zedekiah was the guy put on the throne to replace him.
Yeah, shoot. Who was the commander Nebuchadnezzar ordered to put his wise men to death? We said Arioch. That is correct. Number 4, in Nebuchadnezzar's dream of a tree, what did the tree represent? We said Nebuchadnezzar, and that is correct. Number 5, what did Nebuchadnezzar do first when Daniel interpreted his dream? We said he worshipped the God of Daniel. That is incorrect. He fell on his face and worshipped Daniel.
Yeah.
Daniel 2, hold on.
He worshipped the God of Daniel after the second dream, didn't he?
Let's see, let's do it in the...
Daniel probably corrected him after that.
For as much as thou sawest that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands and that it break in pieces, the great God hath made known. Let's see. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him.
Ooh, gross.
Remind me not to read the ASV.
And sweet odors onto him. Sounds like an awful situation.
I'm going to remember that little term.
Bring in the odors.
He gave him my dream.
It's bring in the spices odors. And perfumes.
Make him smell good.
It sounds better when you say it. Expensive spices and perfumes.
Hey, man, bring in the sweet odors. Sounds way more like what happened.
Cheryl, I'm about to offer sweet odors unto you.
That sounds like a Nebuchadnezzar thing to do. Hey, man, this dude just straight up interpreted that dream. Bring in the odors.
Here's where that's kind of cool, though. In the context, you bring in incense when in the form of a worship setting. So here's what he's doing is he's basically bringing this in to honor Daniel instead of
make that
of
dude
God.
Smell good.
Hey, we don't do that, though. Should we introduce... I mean, this is a semi-serious question. Mm-hmm. But, like, is there something to bringing scents into the worship?
I like it.
Like modern day, can we get one of those things that the...
A sensor.
Yeah, the thing they swing back and forth.
Let's do it.
Okay. I got oils.
Try the government what? Auctions.
Wait, 3 of the 5, we didn't hear from Mike. You're all kind of for that? Why?
I am. It's just there's going to be a lot of people that are going to complain about it who have
and be very confused.
I would do incense, but I figured the fire alarms would go off.
What? I was going to put, actually, I had fully intended to put some frankincense on the furnace filters when we put them in. But that can get a little stiff, so it's not a good idea. But yeah. Okay.
Why? I get biblically why they did it, but like why? Why would you guys do it? To make the place smell different.
No, that's why I asked the question.
Like it smells like vanilla odor. Yeah, and three of you were all on board. That's why I'm asking the question on top of your question.
Troy, why do we have drums?
Yeah, that's music.
And a projector. And
digging on it. So people can read the screen, like read the music?
Well, so if they had, if they did music and stuff at times, reflected of worship to God.
None of those are necessary elements for
worship. Being led
by
the Holy
Spirit. You're right.
Just heads up, he's picking off senses one at a time.
Likewise, incense is not a necessary
right.
element, but it's a useful element.
For
worship.
Boova wants to know more.
Well, no, like I understand, I get what it is, mm-hmm. but...
Well, so here's I think pointing back to Dave's thing then, why does music not weird you out, but the thought of a scent does?
Well, so music, I suppose, is what I'm used to. And what I grew up with, so that's probably why I don't find that as startling. But,
okay.
like, I just don't see how... I mean, maybe people get into incense and I can't see it because I've never done it. So that's where
just
I'm at.
Just using all the senses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God smells like vanilla.
Well, all right, so you come from an education background.
Oh, tell
so,
me.
An education background?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
You have somewhat level of training in terms of education.
Oh,
you
great.
Know that it's the more different types of learning styles that you can engage with your lesson, the more likely the student is to retain it. Similarly, with worship, the more element or the more senses involved, the more likely they are to engage as a person.
We, for quite a while, we were consistently using sandalwood in the prayer room just to make a trigger of so anytime you smell sandalwood. Anytime I do, I go back to the prayer room.
All right.
Actually, I just did a quick search to see if they had like scents or odors in the Bible. Because actually, it happens a lot more than I think you know.
Yeah.
Even the stuff that Jesus is given at his birth, the nard, the like all the things that surround burial. Like, there's a lot of odor driven things, and it just isn't something that we engage in.
Right.
But it's something that this doesn't mean that Christians don't engage in. Like that sensor thing, I mean, it does do something when the guy walks down the aisle and swings it, right?
Oh, yeah,
and
that, smells nice.
We were actually talking about this as a church staff just it was today. We were talking about the some of the stuff that like we've disassociated with a little bit, like high church stuff. Because there were abuses in a system or because it isn't expressly stated as something you always have to do in the Bible doesn't mean that it's necessarily wrong. And so, like, what are some of the things that go on that maybe we have rebelled against or just haven't done that are still, they're perfectly fine things. We just need to make, you just don't worship them. You don't make it, you don't worship the process. And so, like, presence of sense, we were talking about, we've never done anything for, like, Maundy Thursday. Mm-hmm. For the communion just prior to when Jesus is arrested. And so, like, I thought, Maundy Thursday, what the heck is that? I don't want to be tied into this Honda High Church Maundy Thursday business. But, like, we got to talking about it, and, like, what they're pointing to and what you're remembering are cool things. Mm-hmm. They're biblical they're stories of Christ in communion. So, like, yeah, that's cool. So some of that stuff, I think, we can pull out of the rafters, and it may not need redeemed. We just kind of put it on a shelf and said it didn't have a function. I think you got to be careful with those things and not don't baptize it. But, like, you know, they can't – they're not necessarily wrong things. And so it's just interesting, those types of things we can engage. And so when we talk about sense, I wouldn't even know how to go about it. I don't know, like, does it matter what it is? Although, what's the big deal? The essential oil companies, what is it, Young's Living, will not sell you there's one oil that they won't sell you because they don't want you to make the special oil that was in the tabernacle.
The High Holy of Holies.
Yeah, wasn't it? So, like, because the Bible tells you what scents go into that. And the Young's Living Essential Oil Corporation will not sell you one of the oils so that you don't make it. And so like, there was something about it. I don't know enough to speak to it. But, like, it's just an interesting thing that says there's something about scents that we've completely kind of disassociated with anything that we do. And I'm interested. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
Let's finish our quiz. How tall was the golden idol? We said 60 cubits. That is correct. And question 7, who became king of Babylon after Nebuchadnezzar? We said Belshazzar, and that is also correct. We answered 5 out of 7 questions correctly for a score of 72%. Quiz has been taken 15,000 times since 2004, and the average score for the quiz was 53%.
Yeah, buddy.
We know our Nebuchadnezzar 20% better than the average test taker. All right. Mike, you got one more over there?
I do.
Did you go to sleep?
No. Hang on. Dear Life from the Path, My boyfriend, Jimmy, and I have been together for 2 years. After about 4 months, out of necessity, we moved in together, and it was great. Not long afterward, I got a job 2 hours away. Since I moved, we get to see each other only every 2 or 3 weeks. The separation has been tough, but we're together, everything is perfect, and all is right with the world. I feel we are fated to be together. Before the move, Jimmy and I often talked about marriage, and although I'm not crazy about it, I knew it meant a lot to him, so I proposed, ring and all. He initially said yes, then sort of asked me to take back my proposal. Since then, he has been avoiding all discussions about our future, and I don't know what to do. I'm willing to quit my job and go back to be with him, but I'm scared he's going to get cold feet. Obviously, I'm hopeless in love with him, but now I'm feeling lost and confused.
I have a few questions about this story. Does anybody else have any questions about the story?
Yeah.
Is your question about the identity and gender of the person involved?
For one.
Okay.
A little bit.
But, she said she wasn't jazzed about the idea. Proposed. I said, wait, I'm just assuming it's a woman. Okay. Even if it's a dude, it doesn't matter.
Why not?
Other party. Proposes. But isn't jazzed about it. And then. The other, because it's important to the second party. This is what makes marriage license difficult in those states. And then second party says, eh. Can you take it back? And then now they're not talking.
Second party has another person.
You think so?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
First party moved away 2 hours. It's going to happen.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Right. If they were that jazzed about marriage, party B would have moved.
Yeah. Guess what? You're no longer exclusive.
Yep.
Sorry.
Okay. So no advice here, except for move. It's move on.
Yeah. It's a dead on relationship. You need to cut it off.
You know, maybe we should start doing the proposals on the first date. You know what I'm saying? At least you get to know where people are at. So you take them out and you say, "Look, will you eventually marry me?" Yeah. All right. Well, let's have date number two then.
Oh.
If the answer is no, then be like, well. It's nice getting to know you.
I'm all for that.
We're gonna feel like this is going nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, you at least get some. I mean, wouldn't you just want to know that right off the gate? Look, are you interested in marrying me? Yes or no? Yeah. Okay, well, let's keep dating and see if we're heading towards the same area here. We should start asking right off the gate.
I think that's a fair question to ask somebody. I mean, or statement to make.
I'm not sure first date, but maybe second. But
no, because that's just the kind of guy you are. They at least ought to know who they're dealing with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't date just anybody. Or maybe they didn't date me. Something like that.
Well, that's because you kept asking them to marry on the first date, man. Freaks people out.
It also might be your poor mic etiquette.
Oh, it could be.
Yes, it could be. Thanks, Dan.
Okay, on the first date, I could see saying, yeah, I'm looking for marriage in general, but I wouldn't want to on the first date say, oh, yeah, you seem like a really good candidate. That just... It's not enough information.
Well, I mean, if they don't seem like a good candidate, I wouldn't say that.
It's like, hey, does your dad have any goats?
Yeah, right. How would you know whether they're a good candidate?
Here's the deal. The fact that they have marriage in mind, that gets them past most people.
Here's why I disagree with first date marriage talk, and I agree with Herrick on this. Because some people just stick with the first date out of obligation. If they think you're a creeper or generally look like a naked mole rat, from like the beginning of date one, They'll normally wait till the end of date one and then just won't talk to you ever again.
Right.
Okay? If they have decided to go on date number two with you, that means that they found you at least either attractive or interesting enough to come back a second time. Then it's understandable to have that conversation.
And then you can get the measure twice left wanting.
I guess I'm assuming you've known this person a little bit before you date. So, like, if you're like, is that like your first meeting? That would be different.
No, see, I feel like you're just doubling down on the game of dating. When really you should just say, hey, will you marry me?
Now, hold on a second. Can't you just say, does it have to be you specifically?
Yeah.
I feel like if you propose to someone on the first date, you're just exercising poor judgment.
Well,
I didn't say, I want you to marry me. I'm just asking, would you be willing to do it?
I don't know enough about you to answer that.
Well, then I feel like we're not going out again.
No, okay, so maybe are
hold
you...
on, me and Herrick are going through a breakup here. Just let that settle.
Let's hear how this plays out.
No, we're not. I just don't know enough about you yet to commit to...
I'm not saying that we have to get married tomorrow. I'm just saying, is there a possibility you'd be eventually interested in marrying me?
Possibility? Sure.
Well, let's go on another date and see where this goes.
All right, I agree.
So me and Herrick are back together.
Still crazy.
What are you doing in May?
Herrick's moving 2 hours away, Mike.
And you're no longer exclusive.
Like, that's not a problem. He's told me his interest. Secular says, please allow me to offer some clarity. Do not quit your job, because if you do, you may find yourself not only without a job, but also without a place to stay. When someone, man or woman, asks that a proposal be rescinded, it usually means the person feels he or she may have jumped the gun by saying yes. Jimmy is avoiding all discussion about your future because he doesn't want one. And he's afraid to say it directly because he knows it will hurt your feelings. Why would you want to marry a coward anyway?
Yeah.
For your own sake, have an honest conversation with him about this. It may be painful, but it will be better than living in limbo the way you are. As the saying goes, when a door closes, another one opens.
Does Secular actually call him a coward, or was that Mike throwing in the editorial?
Mike. It doesn't matter. Okay. I mean, it's a prison to go into
this. Hey, and that phrase is not true. Like, if you're being locked into prison, when one door shuts, there are no other opportunities. So, I mean, you just need to consider what circumstance you're actually in. Okay. Yeah, no, I think that guy's done for. Okay, here's the deal. Is people get engaged for long periods of time, right? Some people drag that stuff out. And so someone goes, not only do I want to, like, wait to actually set the marriage date, but, like, I want you to take it back so it's not even on the table anymore. Like, that's done. That circumstance is done for you. That's not happening anymore. All right. You've been listening live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us so far this evening. And if you'd like to continue listening to the program, you can't do it here. You're going to have to go to the website. Go to lifefromthepath.org. Hey, check out our most recent interview with Tim Timmons, and his new album, Awake Our Souls, is out. It's a good album. We did an album. There's like a review of sorts. Basically, we'll go through and tell you what we heard, and then you can decide whether you like it or not. But go check out that review under the things, stuff we like on the website, and the interview with Tim. It's a 20-minute interview. He's a sweet cat. And you can check that out right on the front page at lifefromthepath.org. In the meantime, be faithful in the means, and God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Life from the Path.